I am here to say we miss out on a lot if we stay in the smooth sailing and the safe, comfortable pond. There's a lot of life to experience when we get out of that comfort zone. I want to give this gift to everybody. That's what motivates me. My motivation comes from this deep feeling inside of me that I get to be part of this change that I really believe in the world.
Welcome to the Open Exploration Podcast. I'm on a mission to connect with rule breakers, dream makers, and all around inspiring people to explore the possibilities for living a vibrant and honest life on my own terms. It is wild to think about how far this podcast project has come since I first started dreaming about it just about a year ago. I handled that dream so gently for a long time. I had recently realized that I would be leaving my career as a teacher, that I had no idea what was next, and I was just starting to break apart so many of the rules that I had made up for myself and my life. I was scared at the time to even tell anyone about my idea for a podcast, let alone actually put it out into the world. But now, just about a year and 16 episodes later, this little project has brought so much insight and growth and connection. I can't imagine a better way to wrap up this season or to dive into what comes next than with our guest today, our final guest of season one. Carissa Carbon is a leadership coach and a remarkable person. You'll get to hear about Carissa's story and how she shifted away from a life of checking boxes. But we also decided to flip the script and give Carissa the reins to guide me in a coaching session. It was really cool and vulnerable and a little scary to be on the other side and to dig into the deep layers of these mindsets and beliefs that were holding me back in order to move full force into the dreams and goals I have in the coming season. Chris and I dive into a big question that has been pulling at me and ride the waves into some big insights and shifts. It was honestly a really cool experience, and I'm super grateful that I got to capture the insights and energy from this conversation. So, without further ado, the wonderful Carissa Carbon. Okay, beautiful. Feeling good? Our throats are all cleared. We've done our vocal warm-ups. Carissa, thank you so much for coming down and meeting with me today. I'm really excited to finally meet you in person and to get to talk to you.
I'm so thrilled. Thank you so much for having me.
This is such a different kind of conversation because we talked about doing sort of a leadership coaching session with me, and I'm so excited about that. But I don't want to jump past your story because you have a really important and cool story too, and it fits so well with this sort of exploration that I'm on and what I'm trying to learn from. So you shared with me some of the sort of shifts in your plans and these big ruptures in the life that you had laid out for yourself.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about those shifts and those ruptures?
Absolutely. I would say one of the most defining shifts for me was going through divorce. I was in college and thought that checking boxes was the right way to create a life of happiness and fulfillment. So I was really good in school. I was, you know, the straight A student, loved school, and was really good at checking the boxes that I thought I was supposed to check. I got married about 3 weeks after I finished undergrad and very quickly started to think, uh-oh, what have I done? Mostly because I started learning things about myself that were surprising. And I thought, oh my gosh, if I didn't know this about myself, what else don't I know about myself? You know, was 22 the right age to commit myself to another person for the rest of my life when clearly there's so much I don't know about myself? So I started getting curious, started asking those questions. And about 3 years into my marriage, thought, I'm miserable. I've checked all the right boxes. What is going on? What went wrong? I'm supposed to be happy, happily ever after is the dream I signed up for. So went to a lot of marriage counseling, saw multiple therapists, and started to have this sort of inkling in the back of my mind and this voice that started to get louder and louder until I couldn't ignore it anymore. And that voice was saying, maybe what you're supposed to do isn't the path to happiness. Maybe by going inward and listening to that internal voice, maybe that will give you a better path to fulfillment and happiness. And I thought, oh, shoot, this is unexpected. But I got to the point where I couldn't ignore that voice anymore, made the decision to leave my first marriage, and had to wrestle with a lot of guilt about leaving my husband, had to wrestle with a lot of, what are people going to think? I'm, you know, a divorcee in my mid-20s. And I got to that point where I said, you know what? What other people think about me isn't making me happy. So let's see what happens. And that really started me on this journey of self-discovery, blazing my own trail, and leaving other people's opinions by the wayside.
Amazing. The way you talk about it, it sounds like it was such a positive shift in your life and obviously has led you to a much deeper level of happiness. Did it feel like that at the time?
Hell no. It felt terrifying. It felt really scary. And it felt like I was a failure. You know, this idea of getting into a marriage, and my ex-husband did a very good job of helping me think that I was crazy and that there was something wrong with me. You know, he was very much, well, I've been upfront about who I am and what life I wanted since we met, and you're changing all of that. So what's wrong with you? And, you know, we met when I was 19, got engaged when I was 20, married at 22. Not to say that age is a huge determinant in your level of maturity or insight about yourself, but at that stage, I was still, what I like to say, plugged into the matrix. And so this journey was terrifying. I really thought I might be making the biggest mistake of my life. But I thought, you know what? This voice inside of me, this whisper, I have to listen to her, because the thought of not listening to her is even more scary.
Can you explain what you mean by unplugging from the matrix?
Oh my gosh. If you know me long enough, you'll hear me talk about a few things. One is The Matrix, another is Brené Brown, another is dogs. So if you know me long enough, I will talk about all of these things. So for me, unplugging from the Matrix, there's a joke I heard a while ago that The Matrix is a documentary, not a movie. And that feels so true to me, because my journey home to myself started with the willingness to take the red pill, you know, the willingness to lean into uncertainty, into the unknown, not knowing where my journey was going to go, not having the path laid out before me. But unplugging from the matrix to me symbolizes learning to live life on my terms, not by what other people expect me to.
Thinking back to your 19, 20, 22-year-old self, it sounds like your sort of perfect picture for your life. It included this happily ever after marriage, the white picket fence, the house with the 2.5 kids. What else did you picture in that picture perfect life, and how has that shifted?
I think one of the things I expected was that happiness was a destination. I thought that if I checked all those right boxes, I would arrive at a place where things were easy and happy and stable for the rest of my life. And so that, I think, has been the biggest surprise. And honestly, one of the biggest gifts is to recognize it's not about creating stability. It's not about creating a life that isn't changing. It's about, for me, learning to adapt to the changes. So one of the metaphors I like to use is think about sailing in a boat. You know, I thought that life was about learning to control the water, you know, learning to create smooth sailing by having water that was calm and predictable, when now what I've come to believe is, heck no, it's about learning to read the water and adapt and flow with the water and the waves and the storms that come our way. So it's more about becoming adept as a sailor to navigate those waters than controlling the water itself.
We're trying to float only on the little pond. It's yeah. Going to be smooth and safe and protected.
I mean, that's one way to do it, but I am here to say we miss out on a lot if we stay in the smooth sailing and the safe, comfortable pond. There's a lot of life to experience when we get out of that comfort zone.
Can you describe a little bit of your life right now, sort of the waters that you're currently sailing?
Gosh, yeah. I would say the last year and a half has been some choppy water for me. I've really been doing a lot of my deepest internal work over the last year and a half and confronting a lot of old trauma that was stored in my nervous system that I had not given myself the permission to feel, let alone heal from. So it's been a lot of healing, a lot of confronting my own shadow, if you will. So now what I'm really thrilled about is I'm in a great place. The work is paying off, you know, not to say that it's ever done. I'm never going to be finished. But I am really, really happy. I've got a thriving marriage. My husband is my best friend and my favorite person in the whole wide world. I just started a new job at a small tech startup as chief people officer, giving me the chance to really put into practice a lot of philosophies and beliefs I have about leadership and business. I have my leadership coaching business, finishing up my master's in leadership and organizational development. So I'm writing my thesis for that. And most people look at me and they're like, wow, you're super busy. How do you do it all? And I have to say that given all of the work that I've been doing, I don't feel super busy. I don't feel like I'm running from one thing to another. I'm able to give everything in my life the space that it needs and deserves. And that feels really good to feel at peace, not complacent, not stagnant, but feeling really aligned to my purpose and what I'm meant to do in this world.
Yeah, when I think of the phrase busy or like taking on too much, there's this element of being scattered and being drained. It sounds like you're really filled up by all of the things that you're doing and that they really fit with your personal values in a way that doesn't feel scattered or frantic or trying to fit in too much.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say for me, one of the biggest shifts was going from feeling like I have to to I get to. And so for me, that was a big shift, especially when I really got clear on the fact that I am worthy and I belong just as I am today. There's literally nothing I could do or accomplish or achieve that's going to make me more worthy, because every single one of us is completely magic and whole and unique and amazing just as we are. And so there's no need for me to hustle for my worthiness. And that shift has been really huge.
What is it that motivates you in your work then? I think I ask that because I think that that idea, that hustle culture and that like earn your worth, earn the life that you want, prove that you deserve it is so common in our culture that I think it's common to think if we remove those things, then what are you motivated by? So if you already feel worthy, if you already feel comfortable and confident and competent in your life and you are sort of swimming in these blessings and aware of them, then what is it that motivates you to put in the time and energy to that work?
Oh man, I want to give this gift to everybody. That's what motivates me. My motivation comes from this deep feeling inside of me that I get to be part of this change that I really believe in the world. So I don't feel like I have to. I don't feel like I have to touch a number of lives or impact a certain number of people. I just know that I get to be aligned to the work that I believe in. One conversation, if I help one person, you know, learn to lean into that inner voice for themselves and learn to unplug from the matrix and all of that, then that's a great day for me. So so a lot of my motivation comes from wanting to serve others and wanting to elevate the consciousness of our entire species.
A very small goal.
Yeah. Teeny tiny, teeny tiny. But that's the other thing too, is because I don't think of this as there's no finish line for me. I have my life's work that I'm dedicating myself to. I'll never get there. But that's where the shift in my mindset is. This is the journey. I get to lean into every step of the journey, knowing that, yeah, I'm going to fall on my face. Things are going to be thrown at me that I don't expect. But it's the journey itself that is worth it. I'm not seeking any sort of finish line or destination. I have truly learned to appreciate every step of the way.
I was thinking about how right now when we're sitting down to talk with each other, the sort of world around us is in this really tossed up space. And there's so many different things that we could talk about. But one of them that came up in our conversation earlier and that you write about often is that we are in the midst of what's been called the Great Resignation. People are leaving their jobs more than any other moment in history. But you refer to that as the Great Awakening. Can you explain a little bit why you don't just stick with that term, the Great Resignation?
Absolutely. I think it's, you know, a lot of it is our frame of reference. So if we are trying to uphold the status quo, then people resigning from their jobs, which is novel, right? Especially in 2021 alone, 69 million Americans resigned from their jobs. And so when we think about it in terms of loss and resigning and quitting and giving things up, I think that's a really negative connotation. I call it the Great Awakening because I think that people are really starting to wake up to the grind, the hustle, the culture in which we live. And people are thinking, the heck am I working for, right? Why am I working to make somebody else a lot richer when I'm trying to scrape by to make ends meet? Or why am I working in a job that I hate and doesn't fulfill me? So I think the pandemic has thrown us into, you know, sort of this incubation where we're kind of at this inflection point. We may end up annihilating each other. Who knows? But for me, the Great Awakening is, it's really exciting, you know, to see so many people really asking themselves the questions of, who do I want to be? What do I want to do? What kind of life do I want to create? Because the journey I started 10 years ago of recognizing, wait a second, checking all these boxes isn't making me happy. It's not making me fulfilled. It's not making me feel more connected to the people I love. So I'm going to change that. I'm going to do something different. I think that's freaking beautiful.
I was looking through your website and there's a couple of questions that feel really big and important. I just pulled out a couple. There's lots of examples. But one of them is, what stories and experiences from my past may be keeping me from living into my potential? Another, how can I create more fulfillment in my own life and positively impact those around me? These are huge questions and they're not easy to answer. How do you guide people to meaningfully answer these questions, or at least to work into them?
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful question. I think the first step is curiosity. The first step is when people come to me and they say, oh, I want to create this life. I want to make changes in my life. We're wired to not want to change. We're wired to want to stay safe and comfortable, right? Because when you think from a biological standpoint, the risk takers in the savanna were the ones who probably got eaten. The ones who prioritized safety and comfort were the ones making babies and passing their genes on to the next generation, you know? So we have become wired to stay safe and comfortable. And so as we get curious about, well, how did I end up this way? Why did I end up this way? And what I like to do is, we'll see if we can do this together today, is really start to help people recognize a lot of the stories. One of the stories that I find to be most pervasive is, I thought this was just the way I am. So we tend to grow up thinking that a lot of our tendencies, our default behaviors are intrinsically part of our personality. When we actually get curious, we can trace it back to a traumatic experience or a learned behavior from our upbringing. And so it's almost like learning to zoom out. And if we're fish swimming in the water, it's learning to see the water that we're swimming in and the impact that it's had on us.
Well, I think this is a great time then to sort of shift gears, and I'm going to just be an open book here and let you do your thing.
This is really exciting. So I want to acknowledge you first, Lily, for your courage, because while this may not seem that scary to you, being really open and vulnerable, especially with an audience, can be really terrifying. So I want to acknowledge the courage that it takes to be open in this type of setting. That's huge, and that's really commendable. So what we're going to do today is a little bit of what I like to call hot seat coaching. As we know that so much of this podcast is about your own personal self-exploration, so I think this is really, really beautiful and perfect timing. What you shared with me ahead of time is that some of these questions that you're asking yourself on your own journey that I think will really resonate with a lot of people, especially going through this Great Awakening, right? Mm-hmm. Asking ourselves these questions. So what I'll say is, you're in the driver's seat. Even though I'm the coach here, I'm in the passenger seat of this vehicle. Coaching is all about helping you to come up with your own answers. It's different than something like mentoring, where you might admire the path that I've followed, so I could tell you what I did to get here. I might make suggestions of things you could do, people you could meet, things you could try in order to follow the path that I have been on. Whereas coaching is much more about using tools and resources to help you come up with your own answers. It goes back to listening to that internal voice. I could offer you 1,000 suggestions for ways to figure out who you are, jobs you might want to try, but none of that is going to be as meaningful as a self-generated answer. There are a couple of different directions we could go here. I'm curious, what is the question that sits on your heart the most these days? The question that keeps you up at night, makes you worry that you'll never get past it? Something that feels kind of big in your heart.
Yeah. There's something that's been both weighing on me a lot lately and also feels like sort of a guide. And let's see if I can do this in sort of a succinct way, because it feels like a big and tangly question.
You don't have to be succinct.
Great. It's okay. Awesome. I certainly feel this tension in my own life that it feels like who I really am and who I've always been. And how I wish the world worked to actually support human beings and the planet, et cetera, doesn't mesh very well with the society that's been built up around us. And that there's so many elements to what's expected of us in society in order to be successful, what we have to do in order to live comfortable lives with the things that we need, feels very convoluted and tangly and not in alignment with my personal values. And so the question, I guess, that I've been asking myself and trying to explore is, how can I build a life for myself that feels right while also being part of my community and part of the larger world and living in a way that represents what I wish for the world?
So what I heard in that was there maybe some fear to living a life on your own terms because it might contradict what we're expected to do or what everybody else is doing, quote unquote. So I'd love to tap into that a little bit more. Is there a fear that comes up when you think about casting aside all the expectations of society and just living according to your own internal drive?
Absolutely. I think the basis of that fear is a belief that there isn't actually an available option that really fits and that really feels right for me. And so I think there's a couple parts of that that maybe I need to pick apart. One is sort of a perfectionistic tendency of like, it doesn't have to be the perfect picture in order to be the right direction for me. And the other maybe is sort of a cynicism of, I think the options that sort of immediately pop up for me are a little background story to give some context to this. This is certainly not new to me. I think everything that has come up for me, I'm like, okay, I'm such a unique individual. And then I realized that my parents were so, so tapped into these values that I now carry. And so an example is they, when they were first married, moved into the wilderness, built themselves a little cabin, and lived there for years. And they felt disconnected, and it felt ultimately like it didn't matter and it wasn't shifting anything. And so they sort of rejoin society. Okay. So I think I see that as one option, totally disconnect, or on the other hand, stay connected, forget this voice that tells me that it doesn't feel right, and just power through, carry on, try and be successful, and, you know, hope that that works.
I think you brought up something that's really important, so thank you for sharing. We are wired for what is called the binary bias. The idea that it needs to be this or that. And we tend to, especially if you look at today's society, think about, you know, the political spectrum, we tend to spend a lot of our time talking about the extreme ends, right? There's something that's it's very polarizing when we think about these opposite ends of the spectrum. So I'm curious, can you tap into kind of where that desire or where that thought comes up that it's one or the other?
That binary thinking, it's something I've worked on with my therapist, actually, and it is amazing how much it comes up in ways that I didn't recognize. So I'm not surprised to hear you say that. And it's funny that I wasn't even thinking within that lens. But I think it's, I don't know. For me, maybe it's coming up mostly because that's convenient. You know, our brains, when we go one direction and we say like, okay, there's this option, that's not it. All right, let's shift completely. And if I head the other direction, what does that look like? And it's much harder and I think takes a lot more effort and creativity and vision to sort of feel out all of that gray middle space.
Yeah, it definitely takes a lot more mental energy for sure to explore the ambiguity and the complexity between the binary options. Another thing that I'd love to sort of call you on there in terms of going deeper on the binary thinking is it sounds like there's also below the surface an idea that there's a right way or a wrong way, that every choice you make will either get you closer to the right way of living or the wrong way, regardless of who's telling you what the right way or wrong way is. But it sounds like there's still sort of a subconscious belief that every decision you make is either going to be right or wrong. Does that resonate?
Absolutely. Yeah, that resonates completely. And I think is really based in fear. You know, I think if we make our decisions in that way, is this decision right or wrong? There's a lot of fear in that. And it's not really open to all the possibility. I'm really glad that you mentioned that. And I think it's one of those things that's a deep lesson that we have to learn over and over and over again. And that's definitely something that keeps coming up for me. It's interesting, too. I think when I chose the name of this podcast, Open Exploration, there are a lot of reasons that that fit and felt right. But I keep coming back to it when I get stuck in patterns like that, where I'm like, okay, is this right or wrong? Am I doing the right thing or the wrong thing? Am I, you know, moving myself forwards or am I going backwards? Am I progressing or not? Is that that's not the point. That was not the like journey that I set out on here. And it's not my goal to get to anywhere specific. The idea was to really strengthen that muscle of, like you said, being curious, being open, and allowing myself to explore.
Yeah. And so I will say you're way ahead of a lot of other people by giving yourself that permission. But if we could stay on the right versus wrong, I think this goes back to what we were saying earlier in terms of helping to identify the stories and beliefs that we're holding on to. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions here. What does it mean about you if you make the wrong decision?
I think my sort of gut response, if I make the wrong decision, it means that I don't understand myself well enough to serve myself well.
Yeah, and what does that mean?
If I make the wrong decision for myself and I'm not understanding myself or serving myself well, it means that I'm being guided by something other than my actual intuition or my actual knowledge of myself or my values, which I guess means to me that I haven't been able to detangle what is me and what is my like social conditioning. What are my values and what I feel like I'm supposed to do, in air quotes.
Yeah. Yeah. And what would that mean about you as a person?
What a good question. I think the first thing that pops up is like, it just means that I'm a human being in a flawed society where we're all influenced by so many things all at once. And it's really, really hard to detangle what's me, what's my intuition, and what is society telling me. I think there's another piece of it for me, which is that I think I would feel like I'm not doing the work or not committing to the practices that allow me to really tap into my intuition and what feels true to me.
And what does that mean about you as a person?
Oh.
If you don't do that?
Probably that there's some laziness in there. If I'm not, you know, committing the time to like meditate or journal or give myself that space, means that I'm being complacent.
Yeah. And what does that mean about you as a person if you're lazy and complacent?
There's things that are coming up that I feel like feel very vulnerable, but I we'll share them anyways, because that's the whole practice here. One is that I think part of this journey is saying, like, society is messed up in these ways, but I'm better than that, right? Mm. Society tells us that this is the right way to do things, but because I'm better than that, I know that that's not true. That there is sort of, on one hand, an arrogance there, but on the other hand, it's like honoring ourselves as well and recognizing that, yes, we can rise above what's messed up in society. And so I think that what that would say about me as a person is that, no, I'm not better than that. I haven't risen above anything. I'm just getting sucked back into the system.
And what's wrong with that?
For me, I think what's wrong with it is it doesn't feel like it leads to real happiness or real connection. That if I simply follow what society tells me is important, or simply check the boxes like you were talking about before, what I expect that to lead to is consumption, to being drained, to never feeling like I have enough, and living my life in a way that's focused so much on the things that don't actually matter and not giving myself the space or the time or the presence to really honor what does matter.
Yeah. So what I heard come out in that last answer was more of that binary bias, right? You know, the idea of either we need to be living our life completely removed from the system and totally according to our intuition and our inner voice, or if we become, you know, the robots of the system, however we want to phrase it, we become drained, burned out, disconnected from ourselves and, you know, the things that are really important to us. And so I think that's really important because typically, as we saw, you know, sometimes I was just asking the same question, right? Because that helps us go a lot deeper. One of the tools that you could ask yourself in another scenario, and anybody could use this, is actually a term borrowed from like Six Sigma in business. But the idea is called the five whys, right? So this is a way that we can go deep in ourselves by taking that first answer, that gut response, and saying, well, why is it that I believe that? And then come up with another answer. Well, why is it I believe that? Well, why is it I believe that? And we just keep going a layer deeper and a layer deeper, because oftentimes that first response is easy. It's what comes to our mind first. It's what we've been conditioned to say or respond with. And as we go deeper, that is a really good way to start to recognize those beliefs and those stories that we're holding on to. Because typically, if you take this line of questioning far enough down and we're honest enough with ourselves, typically something that could seem like a very superficial question, the root belief behind it at the very bottom is, I won't be worthy. I won't be lovable. I will die. And these seem like very extreme thoughts and stories to have, but they are so prevalent and they are the underpinning of so much of our behaviors that we don't even realize. And so with that courage plus curiosity, that's where we can start to dig in and say, why did I snap at my partner yesterday? Why did I get so down on myself for not going for that run that I thought I was going to run, I was going to go do? And it's because the underlying story underpinning that is, I'm lazy, I'm complacent, nobody loves me, nobody understands me. And so it's when we start to really shine the light on those stories that we can say, whoa, where did that story come from? When did I first start telling myself that story? The bad news and the good news is a lot of that crap comes from childhood. So we carry a lot of that with us today without even knowing it.
Yeah. That's so interesting. While you were talking about that, I was realizing that I wasn't necessarily allowing myself to like open up to that deepest layer, or even like to a deeper layer of what do I think this says about me. The sort of phrase that popped into my head is, I think I have this belief that if I don't live in the quote unquote right way, that I'm wasting my life and that I'm wasting all of the blessings that have been given to me in my life. I think that there's probably deeper layers than that, but
I think that's a beautiful one. Let's stay with that. And a lot of times, even when we think we have that thought, right, I'm wasting my time or I'm wasting my life, I like to ask people, what's your definition of wasting time? Because if we don't ever stop to ask ourselves that question, we might just keep thinking, I don't want to waste time. I can't waste time. So let me ask you, Lily, what's your definition of wasting time?
Wow, this question feels like it was just written out specifically for me, because time is such a big theme in my life. It's a real struggle for me. I think we were sort of talking before this about Enneagram types and what that says. And you said something that hit home so, so deeply. I don't remember your exact words, but basically this idea that I think I'm a type 9. I still have some questions about that, but I think that that's right. And what really resonated was this idea that we, us 9s, I think I can be in that category, are really wired to move slowly and to, you know, appreciate the present moment. And that's always been true for me. I think as a little kid, I truly could have spent an entire day just being and looking at this and looking at this and exploring the next thing. So that doesn't work in today's world. It is not an acceptable way to be in so many ways. And so I have always felt like, why does it take me longer to do things? You know, everybody I know can get ready in 5 minutes, and I find a card from my grandma that I didn't know that I had, and then I have to read that. And then, you know, a silly example, but so wasting my time, I think there's so many different levels to that. One is if I get up in the morning and I, you know, do my normal routine and sort of take care of myself in the way that feels right to me, I will be late for the thing that I need to get to. That's just true. So I've learned throughout the years that I need to cut those things out. I need to move quicker. I can't waste time on the things that are very grounding and healthy for me, because then I won't be meeting the expectations somewhere down the line during my day. On a bigger scale, in terms of wasting my time in my life, I don't know. I don't know what that means to me. Living in ways that are unhealthy and unhappy.
So let's think on an average day, what would you consider time well spent versus time wasted?
Time well spent, I think about things like being really present. So for me, meditating or journaling are pieces of my routine that are the quickest to go. You know, like those are the easiest things to just say, like, I don't need to do this, and pluck it out. But that feels like time well spent. It feels like that little bit of time really does fill me up and recharge me in a way that matters in a very deep way. Connecting with people, when I, you know, get to hear somebody's funny story, or I get to cuddle on the couch with my partner and our dog, when I get to walk outside and check on our chickens and get eggs from them, like that feels like time well spent. You know, when I notice that the sunshine is coming through the window and I can like feel it on my face for a few minutes, that feels like time really well spent. When I think about time wasted, the sort of like being siphoned out of my life and feeling like I wish I could take that time back, it's usually when I'm stressed or when I'm tired and I turn to distractions like social media, or when I try and push myself to get the work done and I'm just moving at a much slower pace because I'm exhausted, or because there's this sort of like anxiety, fight or flight sort of response going on in my body. And so I'm not actually doing valuable work, but I'm also not doing anything else.
Mm. So what I heard in that response is that for you, time well spent is any activity that grounds you in the present moment and makes you feel more connected to yourself and others. Whereas wasting time is doing things that drain your energy, pull you out of the present moment, and make you feel like you're aligned to someone else's expectations.
Well said.
Isn't life really about doing what we feel is time well spent?
Absolutely. And one of the sort of tensions that I feel, and I've recognized this about myself for a long time, I would like to spend my entire life holding hands with my loved ones on top of a mountain soaking in the sun. You know, like that sounds amazing and fulfilling and so grounded in the present moment. I also know that there are other areas of my life that are important and do make me feel fulfilled and successful in some ways. And some of those are things like earning a good income, making progress towards my professional goals. So I guess the tension for me there is, how do I tap into this like bigger picture umbrella of staying present and working towards my goals and living in a way that feels fulfilling and energizing to me, and also be more okay with the, like, I'm going to have to sit and stare at my computer for a few hours every day because, like it or not, that's a big part of the work that I'm doing in order to fulfill these goals that I want to fulfill. There's parts of that work that don't feel that exciting or passion inspiring to me. But if I'm going to make this a real career, if I'm going to be really successful, I do have to give some of my time and attention to those. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally makes sense. One thing I would offer is, after standing on top of a mountain, holding hands with your loved ones in the sunshine, after a while, you're probably going to get bored. Yeah. You know, so that might be like a peak experience, but it may also not be how you want to spend every minute of every day, right? So this is where the binary bias comes back in, where we think it either has to be something that I feel fully aligned with, fully present, I love every second of it, or I have to sell my soul a little bit, you know, to the devil of, you know, being tethered to my laptop, working, hustling, whatever it is. So what if it's not about 100% of our time being super present and grounded in every single moment, connected with loved ones? What if it's just about doing a little bit more of that every day? Just a little bit more. Because what you said earlier is that the practices that make you feel most connected to yourself, make you feel most present, the ones that are time well spent, are the first things to get chucked out the door when life comes a knocking. So what would that mean? How would that look for you if you said, you know, maybe I'm not going to meditate for an hour every day, but I'm going to meditate every day because this is something that is grounding and that makes me feel like it's time well spent. How would that feel to you? Just imagine if your goal each day was to just do a little bit more of what you consider time well spent.
Yeah, I love that. It's so interesting too. This feels incredibly obvious now, but what you said about, like, even if I did get to choose this picture perfect scene in my life and then make that my entire life, that would not be fulfilling. Duh. But I think that that was really helpful to me, and recognizing that there are other aspects of who I am and what feels fulfilling that include sitting at the computer and, like, getting my ideas out or doing this kind of grindy type work, because that also kind of sparks something in my brain and allows me to move forward. And so that idea of, I guess what I'm hearing is, like, bringing it more into balance rather than saying, this is how I want to spend all my time always. Ugh, I can't have that. Why not? It's saying, this is important to me also, so I'm going to bring a little bit more of that into my day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's balance, and then it's also a really powerful tool called reframing, right? This idea that how we orient ourselves to the tasks in our lives makes all the difference. What we tell ourselves about what we have to do or get to do or want to do, the task itself is really inconsequential. If, as you just said, you can approach sitting on your laptop as, oh, this is really exciting because I get to get my ideas out and I really want to make something in my career. I want to achieve something. I want to have some sort of impact. Then it may also change your frame of mind when you sit down at your laptop next time, because that's one of the most important things when we think about stories, is those scripts that kind of run on autopilot, right? As soon as you sit down to your laptop, you might have a script that you hit play. Ugh, I have to be on my laptop. Mm-hmm. Ugh, I'm not connecting with people that I love. I'm stuck behind the screen. This is hustle and grind. If I'm not careful, this is going to drain me. I'm going to get burned out. That's the script that might run. But as we reframe that script, you can do the exact same task, and now you might get 10 times more enjoyment out of it because you don't have that same script running on repeat.
Wow, that was such a light bulb for me. I'm so curious now of what those scripts are that do pop up day after day after day, 100 times a day, because I think there are so many of them. It's interesting too, because I sort of see myself as a person who's pretty aware of my mind chatter usually, but I think that's been a real blind spot for me because all of those things, computer work, finance, I've kind of put in this category of like, I don't care about those. Those aren't like within my values kind of. And so I think it's created this area where maybe my mind chatter is super negative about those things. And it's like, yeah, of course, because those aren't my values. That's not what's important to me. Wow. I definitely want to pay attention to that.
Yeah.
Recognize those patterns.
It can be really, really powerful. And that's not to say that we go allow ourselves to go to the extreme of, you know, toxic positivity either, mm-hmm. right? It's not about, oh, now I have to reframe everything so that I find joy and excitement in every little task in my life, right? I hate doing my taxes. I just hate it. And it's something I have to do. But for me, it's the story of, okay, this is something I do once a year. It's part of living in the system, in the country I live in. I don't want to go to jail for not paying my taxes. That doesn't mean I inherently have to find joy in doing my taxes. Mm-hmm. But by interrupting that story of how much I hate it, how much I'm not going to enjoy it when I sit down to do it, just noticing the story without attaching to it can be really important. Because the metaphor I really like is, let's say we're sitting outside at a coffee shop and we're having a conversation and we see people walking by. Maybe one person stops to engage us in conversation based on, they really like your sweater, you know, and we chit chat for a few minutes and then they go about their day. But most of these people are just going to walk by. And interestingly, that's how we can approach a lot of our thoughts. We can be sitting in the coffee shop, drinking our tea or coffee, whatever we love, and notice the thoughts going by. But it's when we ask the thought to sit down with us, to stay a while, when we attach to that thought, that's when our wheels tend to spin in that particular story. Whereas what we can start to do is, as we zoom out, we start to notice, I'm the observer of my thoughts. I have thoughts. I am not my thoughts. But oftentimes, because thoughts happen in our head, we just assume they're all true. We assume they're all fact. And it's really just our interpretation, our lens of viewing the world, and how we've been conditioned, how we've been brought up, that shapes the flavor and the color of those thoughts. But we can let them pass by. We don't have to ask them to sit down and have lunch with us.
Yeah, I love that metaphor. I think what can be really challenging for me is if one of those thoughts that otherwise would just pass by sparks a very emotional response. You know, if somebody walks by the coffee shop and flips us off, we're not going to just let them walk by and not think about it again. Like, that is going to stay with us and it's going to keep like churning those feelings and those emotions. So that's a tricky part.
I think that's actually genius that you just said that. I love that you brought that up, because our default response when someone walks by and flips us the bird is flip them the bird right back, mm-hmm. get out of here. And then we start to avoid those thoughts that do cause a really strong emotional reaction. Those are the thoughts we should be inviting to sit down with us, because oftentimes we don't really give a lot of importance to our emotions, right? We kind of think, oh, emotions, they just happen to us, whatever it is. We've learned to glorify the age of the brain, if you will, right? Oh, it's just synapses firing. It's just chemistry, right? We can modify our brain chemistry, and that's our whole lived experience. Emotions are really, really rich signals. If I get really pissed at my partner for not emptying the dishwasher, that's a pretty trivial thing to get really pissed about. So the fact that I get really pissed doesn't mean I'm wrong, doesn't mean it's bad, doesn't mean that I shouldn't feel that way. That's an opportunity to say, huh, why did that thing give me such a strong emotional response? Maybe I should sit down with that thought. Maybe I should dig a little deeper, have a conversation, right? Instead of avoiding, instead of burying, instead of flipping the bird to that, you know, strong emotional reaction, those are the thoughts and the emotions that we should sit down with.
Hmm. Yeah, invite them in, ask them questions. What is this about?
Yeah. What is this trying to tell me? Why are you flipping me the bird? What is it that I need to learn or that I get to confront in this moment? So we're kind of at a natural lull in the conversation. You tell me, how are you feeling in this moment?
Ooh, I feel good. I think that there's some practices that I want to pull more into my life. This feels like sort of a pendulum that is often kind of on my mind, where I will swing to one side and be really, really mindful about my practices and my habits and my thoughts and how I spend my time. But that sort of to a certain degree can feel limiting or overly structured. And so then the pendulum swings the other way, where that like disappears from my life kind of.
Yeah.
And so I'm recognizing another option to swing a little bit more in the middle, or at least an invitation right now in my life to swing back towards the center of that. I think there's another part of that that I'm excited to try, which is to, like I said, notice the thoughts that come up around elements of my work that I've always sort of felt like, oh, I just wish this wasn't part of it. Like, oh, it's so stupid that this has to be part of my life every day. Why do I have to sit in traffic? Why do I have to use a computer? And to the opportunity there to investigate that a little bit and allow for there to be some gray area and some nuance.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, speaking of the pendulum, oftentimes we lament the fact that the pendulum swings at all.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is learning to ride the pendulum, right?
Yeah. And recognizing that we are equipped for that. It doesn't feel comfortable and it doesn't feel great all the time, but we're built for that. We'll be okay.
Better than that, we'll be better for it, right? I mean, think about all the stories that we tend to gravitate towards of people in society that we look up to, the heroes that we admire. I can't name one who had, you know, a super easy life and had everything handed to them and nothing ever went wrong. And so therefore we admire them.
Right.
We admire people who rise to the challenge.
Look
how
comfortable they were.
Yes. Let's celebrate how comfortable they were. No, those aren't the stories we gravitate towards, because that's not how we're built.
Yeah. Well, on that note, I think while I have this time with you and sort of access to these skills and these tools, I would love to talk about my next steps, if we could, and sort of where I think I'm headed and what maybe I can bring with me into these next seasons.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Well, as we're talking, I'm wrapping up season one of this podcast, a project that started out very much as, this is going to be for me, I might as well record it so that I can share it, was my cover story. I think if I was really, really honest with myself, there's this question of like, if you could pick anybody in the world to be and just like plop into their life, like who would it be? And mine have always been these people who spend their time connecting with people and sharing their stories and having really deep conversations and then getting to share those with the world in a meaningful way. And so I think I'm getting a lot more honest and a lot less sort of sheepish about really wanting this podcast to be a big part of my life and setting goals around that and thinking about how to make it real.
So where's the uncertainty in there? You sound pretty clear.
I think there's a lot of layers of uncertainty. One is that even as I'm saying this and talking about how much progress I've made in terms of being honest with myself and not being so sheepish about the real honest answer about what my goals are, I do still feel a little silly about this. I shared this with you of, you know, I'm 29, I'm almost 30. A couple of years ago, I was on this like really clear career path. I have a master's degree. I was using that every single day and could kind of see like where that was headed. Now I've taken from a lot of perspectives, and certainly from like the mainstream perspective of society, I've taken this huge leap backwards. I'm not using any of my degrees. I'm making
very near minimum wage at a part-time job and putting all of my time into creating this thing that is not financially solvent, at least not yet. And I guess the sticking point is I feel internally that I'm on the right path, and I feel a real peace and comfort with the idea of being patient and letting this become what it's going to become and being open to the twists and the turns on that path. And at the same time, I feel more so an internal pressure. I think the people around me in my life are really, really supportive and get it in a way that I feel incredibly lucky to have them. I don't think that that's common. You know, I have never once had to explain to my dad or to my partner, like, I know I'm not making this amount of money, but this is important to me. They really do understand it, and they're proud of me for taking this leap. But I feel this internal pressure to prove that this is real and to prove that I'm an adult and a professional and not just a kid with this craft project.
What do you have to prove?
I mean, I just said that nobody in my life who's really, really important to me is putting any pressure on me to prove anything.
Well, let me ask you this. Put yourself back into a day where you were using your degrees and you were working, you were hustling. How happy were you?
In that space, I was miserable. I can say without any doubt, I think there were parts of that job and parts of that season of my life that brought me a lot of joy. And all of them had to do with human connection. I loved connecting with students. I loved when the conversations in the classroom veered towards something that felt real and important to me. But generally, all of my time was planned out. It didn't feel like my life belonged to me. I was exhausted and overstretched, and no matter how hard I worked, more was asked of me. And so it felt very defeating and very out of alignment with the life that I wanted to live.
So why would you be working to get back to that?
Hmm.
And what I mean by back to that is also what you had said of, I'm an adult, I'm a professional, right? You know, all of these sort of labels that we put on ourselves, I'm willing to bet that in those moments you felt like an adult and you felt like a professional.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was very easy to answer like, well, what do you do? Here's my career. Here's my answer to that. What's really interesting and actually helpful is that I realized when you asked that, my goal is not to get back to that. And I think there obviously is an element of I want what I'm doing to sound good and to sound impressive and to look adult and professional from the outside. I think more than that, actually, I recognize that this season of my life has been so freeing and so joyful and really exciting and so tossed up and scary. And with that, I know that it's not sustainable. You know, like I haven't, if we were to believe that you land somewhere and that's the place that you need to be, like I have not landed in a place that feels sustainable. I guess more so than trying to get back to where I was and more so than trying to look good from the outside or to look professional and adult, it's recognizing that this season is really, really valuable and important in its own way. And if this was it for the next 40 years, it wouldn't work.
Sure, but I think we know there's nothing for the next 40 years.
Yeah.
Right? Unless we choose safety, comfort, predictability, which tends to wither our souls. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like you're very intentional about wanting to make your soul sing and allow your soul to dance and be on fire.
Yeah, I think that's true. It's so interesting when you start peeling back the layers. And I mean, I guess this is the whole thing that you were talking about before. Once we get deeper into those stories that we tell ourselves all the time and we bring them out into the light, they really wither. You know, I think that that is a story that I've been stuck on of like, this can't last forever. This isn't it because this can't be my permanent spot. And when we bring that into the light, like, yes, duh, of course not. That's not how life works. This is not how it's going to be forever. It's how it is for this moment.
Yeah. So when you think about kind of those next steps forward, and you've already started to identify some of the external expectations, the stories around how it's perceived, how people see you, whatever that is, as you start to shed those stories, what gives you the most anxiety about the next steps that you're planning to take?
What if I put all this work and energy into this path forward and it turns out I hate it, or I love it right now, but then I burn out? I think that's a big underlying fear. And I think maybe even on a deeper level is the fear of what if that's going to be true of anything that I try? What if it's that there's something that's wrong in me, if it's a laziness or a lack of the ability to like follow through and see it through to the end, where I'm just always going to be shifting in my life. And if I'm always shifting and always getting bored or always getting burnt out, then I never really get to see what I'm capable of or create something that feels meaningful.
So what I heard was, if I keep changing my mind, I won't be able to do something that I find meaningful and impactful. Mm-hmm. Does that feel true?
Yes and no. The no part of that is that the example of this podcast project already feels really meaningful. I've gotten to have conversations that I never would have had otherwise and connect with people that I never would have met otherwise. And that in itself is so valuable to me.
So even if you decided to drop the podcast tomorrow, would you look back at this time as time well spent or time wasted?
That's a great question. Yeah, time well spent, absolutely. I think I've learned so much about myself, and one of the major things that I've learned is that I can learn new things and I can gain new skills that I've never had before. And I can take on a project that feels overwhelming and scary. And maybe it's not going to be that scary when I actually go out and do it.
Yeah. So you've learned a lot about yourself. You've had a lot of fun. It sounds like this period has been expansive. Mm-hmm. And you've allowed yourself to expand into this space. What more is there?
Yeah, absolutely. I guess there's another layer of it too, of sort of a trust in myself that if it turns out in a couple weeks or a couple years or a couple decades that it feels like it's time for me to shift gears and move into something new, that's not going to be because I'm lazy and don't want to work hard at this thing, or that I'm too indecisive and I can't follow through on something that matters to me. Genuinely, I know in my heart that that's not going to be the answer. It will be because there's the next right thing is calling me. So I guess if I can focus on that knowledge and an understanding that is much more like self-honoring than self-deprecating, then there's a lot less fear.
Yeah. So given everything we've just talked about, let me ask, what's bringing you anxiety about these next steps? Are you still feeling anxious? Do you still feel the fear?
I think the honest answer is that for the most part, I feel less anxiety about these next steps than I have about pretty much anything in my life. Mm-hmm. I think I've brought a lot of anxiety into my quote unquote career path, and a lot of this sort of feeling of urgency of like, oh my gosh, I'm 21 and I don't know the absolute trajectory of the rest of my life. Certainly that means I'm going to fail, you know, like, or oh man, I am really feeling anxious about this week at work. There's got to be something wrong with me. I think that I feel I have grown a lot since those moments in my life. And mostly when I think about the next steps and the work that I want to do and the possibilities that could come from that work, it feels more exciting And like there's this huge spark of energy in me and sort of an excitement to see what happens, more so than fear or anxiety around what could go wrong. Certainly there are days when I'm not in such a positive, healthy space, or something goes wrong and kind of throws a wrench in what I thought was my plan or what I thought was my trajectory. And in those times, those old stories of self-doubt and anxiety just pop on up. But
yeah,
generally, I feel really excited.
Capture that. Hold on to that feeling. Because here's the thing that you said a minute ago. You talked about the internal pressure, right, of what you're putting on yourself. What I'd like to call that is internalized pressure. Mm-hmm. What is, I'm just going to pretend it's the number one question. I don't know if it's the number one, but it's up there. What's like the number one question we ask little kids when we meet them?
What do you want to be when you grow up?
What do you want to be when you grow up? What a load of crock.
Yeah.
To put on a 5-year-old about what the rest of their trajectory of their life is going to be, right?
It's like, how high can you jump in those cool shoes? What do you want to be when you grow up?
Seriously. Where do I get some of those light up shoes is usually my first question.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so I think that's the thing is it might feel like it's an internal voice, right? Because the people around you aren't echoing that voice. They're not telling you, oh, Lily, you have to figure this out tomorrow. Where are you going with your life? But it's not internal pressure. It's internalized mm-hmm. pressure because we, and this is where zooming out can be so helpful because we tend to, I mean, even at 18, who the heck knows what they want to do with their life at 18? And yet we say college, you have to go to college right after high school because if you don't go straight into college, you'll never go back to school. Great. Maybe I don't want to go back to school. Maybe school isn't where I'm meant to live my life.
And if that's going to be really important to me and is the direction of my goals, of course I'll find my way back to school.
Exactly. Exactly. And so this whole idea of putting pressure on figuring out the rest of the trajectory of our lives, that is not something that we feel intrinsically inside of us. We get to live moment to moment. We get to make the next right move. You said this earlier, right? Based on all the information, based on my experiences, based on who I am today, this feels like the next right move. A week, a year, 10 years from now, the next right move will likely feel very different because you won't be in the same place or hopefully not the same person that you were when you made that decision. Mm-hmm. So lean into that next right move.
Yeah, and allow for that future growth. Build that into the quote-unquote plan.
allow the future to unfold before us.
That idea that we always ask little kids, what do you want to be when you grow up? And then in middle school and then in high school and then through college. We'll see if I can like put this into words in the way that it just clicked for me. I think that at the heart of that question is something really good, or at least really well-intentioned.
Yep.
That the idea of that question is, I want to know you and the deepest parts of you and what drives you and what you're excited about and what you're interested in and what you want your life to look like. But because we don't ask those types of questions, and because the question is so narrow in scope of what is the job title that you're going after and how is that going to make you happy for 40 to 50 years, right? Because we're not asking the real deep, honest, heartfelt questions, we're just asking that one kind of easy question. It feels like a trap rather than an opportunity to share ourselves with each other. And so I think what clicked for me is that I've been asking myself a variation of that question also, which is, what is the career path that will allow me to live a happy life? And embedded in that question are all of these other questions of what really matters to me? How do I want to spend my time and my days? What balance of freedom and stability do I want in my life? But all pointed to the goal of like, okay, but what's the job title? What's the job title? Rather than a conversation that's more like this, where we're digging into those pieces of what actually is going to light me up. And some pieces of that will come from a professional trajectory. And some pieces of that will come in making a decision about my career right now that might shift later. but some of those pieces are going to come from other elements of my life and be tied in ways that I don't know yet.
Absolutely. I think you tapped into something that is really, really beautiful. A lot of the pressure, even that our parents tend to put on us, very well-intentioned, right? Most parents, luckily, are not thinking, how can I make my kid miserable today? How can I really put them in a box where they feel that they can't express themselves, they can't be happy? That's not the guiding principle that most parents have, right? It's, I want my kid to have a better life than the one I had. I want them to have more possibility, more opportunity. So even the pressure that parents put on kids to pick the right college, right? It's all exactly what you said, an oversimplification of what they truly intend, right? They want their kid to be happy. And in the society that we live in today, oftentimes the college you go to can be a predictor of your long-term opportunities and your success and your happiness, your fulfillment, all of those things. So we boil it down to the simple question of, you have to pick the right school. But then it goes back to right and wrong. This idea that one decision that we make will impact the entire rest of our life. We're making those decisions every single day, right? Every little decision that we make has some influence on the trajectory of the rest of our lives. I think about meeting my husband. The year I met my husband, I was convinced I was going to move from North Carolina to California. Got a job offer, and I said, shoot, this is a really good job offer. Okay, I'll do this for the next couple years. California will hopefully still be there in a couple years. You know, it won't have fallen into the ocean at that point. And if I hadn't taken that job, I may never have met my husband. And so it's those little decisions. Yeah, they change our trajectory. But really the best we can do is that next right move that feels mm-hmm. good for us. So I think that's really beautiful the way you summarize that.
Yeah, I love that example too of trusting that intuitive call that this is right for me even though it's not what I planned.
Yep.
You had no way of knowing how many gifts that was going to bring.
So many. They keep giving.
I love that. Wow. Well, Carissa, thank you so much. I think what a cool thing to be sort of on the other end. I love getting to ask people questions about their life, and you really are a master at that craft. I think the light bulbs that went off for me and lots of elements that I'll continue thinking about, I hadn't really expected that. I think I often see myself as somebody who does so much of this like work on my own, and I'm naturally very inquisitive and tapped into my emotions in ways that are a blessing and a curse. But I was, yeah, I guess surprised by how much that brought up for me. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your willingness. Thank you for the courage, and all of your work and self-awareness definitely helped make this a really fruitful conversation. So thank you very much for allowing me to be here on the journey with you.
Oh, anytime. Come back again soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Open Exploration Podcast. You can find out more about Carissa's work and follow her blog at carissacarbon.com. If you'd like to stay in the loop on all things Open Exploration between seasons, follow us on Instagram or Facebook at Open Exploration Podcast. This show is produced by me, Lily Worthen. Thank you to Poddington Bear, John Sib, and the other unlisted artists for the music that brings this podcast to life. And a big thank you to my nieces and nephew for their sweet send-off at the very end of each episode. To all of you who have listened and shared episodes, left reviews and ratings, donated to our Patreon, I can't tell you how much I appreciate the love and support on this first season, and I can hardly wait to come back for season two. Thank you, love to you all, and until next time, happy exploring.